We're continuing in Lesson 1 this morning. I want to do a little review before we continue with the study. We've been talking about building a biblical home, and we've likened the building of a home to going to war. And really, when we talk about building a biblical home, we're really going to be talking, you'll see a parallel emphasis on faith, building faith, walking by faith, listening to God. And so it's no surprise then that we've covered verses that talk about the kind of commitment it takes to be a Christian. Because frankly, when you're in the work of molding people, you're in one of the most challenging areas that you can be in. And it takes the power of God to accomplish that. And therefore, as we see passages, again, talking about becoming a disciple of Christ, one of the things that we see is that the first thing you've got to do is you need to sit down first and count the cost, whether you have enough to finish it. Of course, in this parable, it's talking about being a disciple of Christ, and how much, what is it going to take? Verse 33 of this chapter says, if you don't forsake all you have, you cannot be his disciple. And then the parallel of war, which was the illustration we were using last time, that if you're going to make war, you need to sit down first and count the cost. War is costly. Let me tell you what war is more costly. Does it cost the winner or the loser more? It costs the loser more. And that's one of the things that I really wanted to emphasize here. I don't want us to be morbid or fearful as we raise our children, as we enter into marriage. But the cost of failure are enormous. You look in war, back at this time, we suggested if you're in the war, let's say you're king. Let's suppose you're Manasseh and you lose. What happened to Manasseh when he lost? He was taken captive. He had hooks put in his lips. And he got to walk to Babylon. And then he did repent. And he came back and he changed his way. But, you know, you lose in war, you may die. Your children could be taken in captivity, not seen again. And you may say these are terrible things. Let me tell you, I think failing in the area of the home can be worse in terms of the pain and the hurt that brings. And so again, I'm saying we've got to count the cost. We tend to be overconfident. And we, again, I'm reviewing from last week. We tend to think that it's easy and we just naturally are given all the talents to do what we need to do in the home. And that's not true. We've got to be able to learn and learn something that we haven't learned. And we talked about last week about how there have been churches with good people that ended up having about the same statistics the world does in terms of divorce. And so we've been pointing out that really, again, we need to have a faith in God. If you're going to have a successful home, there has to be a commitment to building your strength, building your life, building your faith, really. And it's just that you just cannot take church casually. You cannot take the Bible casually. If you're going to overcome the world, if you want a different life, a different home than the world, then you got to have God's help. And how you overcome the world is by faith. So again, as a review, we're talking about that. We need to completely commit to God's wisdom. And we talked about last week about how, you know, nations are as nothing. God just takes down nations again. We've talked about all of that. But we kind of finished on this section where David pointed out that if you're going to go to war, you need God's help. And you got God's help, you're going to find you're going to take a different approach to war than the nations around you. The nations around you will look at numbers. They'll look at logistics. They'll look at technology. But if you have the Lord on your side, as they told Samson, you come to me with a sword and a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. Who won? You see. And another passage from, of course, at the end of this, he says that all assembly shall know that the Lord is not saved with a sword and a spear, for the battle is the Lord's. Now, this helps me a lot. Because you may be in this class, okay, I've got to get every point down. I've got to remember every point. Trust in God. Pray to Him. You and I and everyone else are going to make mistakes. We're going to belly flop, so to speak, jumping off the diving board, and we're going to make messes. But guess who can help us and will help us? It's the Lord. And if you have the Lord on your side, He can take you where you are with the abilities you have and create a very powerful work in your home. And so remember that it's not, you know, it's not everything we talk about as far as the do's and don'ts here, I think they're going to be found in the Lord. But as David said, you're going to go to battle. I will not trust in my bow nor my sword shall save me. But you have saved us from our enemies and have put to shame those who hated us. Now, we didn't get to talk about this, but I just want to talk about this point right here. We tend to be the kind of mother and daddy and husband and wife that we saw in our homes. We tend to repeat that. I mean, it's hardwired into us because that's what we've seen. We learn from that. Now, when it comes to following God, everything God wants us to do makes sense, doesn't it? We can all figure it out. Let's talk about battles. Give me some interesting instructions God gave His commanders and those in battle that you wouldn't think would have anything to do with the battle.
Jericho,
that's right. If you want to take a city, you can march around the walls and blow horns at it. That's how you do it. But you see, they God gave them victory. Give me some more. Interesting ways. What is it in the Judges? Gideon, yeah. Gideon, the Lord told him, get as many soldiers as possible, right? And I'll never forget when I was in high school, I was at West End, and West End was known for pretty rough. I think the band could have beat up the football team at that time. I mean, they had 4 band directors in 3 years, so I mean, I remember one real peppy girl, a lady band director is kind of new for the city, and she was real peppy and stuff, and she called the band director that I later would have as a band director at Huffman. And because we had so many numbers, she says, you know, you might want to take the field first because of our numbers and we'll be louder. That is, you know, she thought she was going to be nice. We've got this big number. And Mr. Wade goes, it's not quantity, it's quality. Got her mad. We're going to show them up, you know, but see, that's really true when it comes to a lot of things. It's not quantity, it's quality. And it's in faith. There are going to be stands you're going to have to take that people are going to think you're crazy. Brethren will think you're crazy. Sadly, I've been in churches where brethren took a stand and you know, they were kind of beat up on for it. Because, you know, there are a lot of brethren will raise their children and let their children do what the world does because they don't want them to be different. So you remember that. As you raise your children, walk by faith. And you need to go from a biblical standpoint of what is right and wrong and standing on your faith rather than trying to figure it all out from what the world's doing. So just remember that. And you can multiply examples of this. And so and that's going to be, for us, for people in this class, that's going to be our struggle. Will we trust God in His wisdom? Will we let our children dress like the world, do the things with other people of the world, or do we put faith first? If you do that, again, there will be struggles, but you will be blessed, I believe, in your home and with the kind of children and the kind of home that you have. But if you're not committed, ahead of time, then Satan, you know, how does Satan mold us in our homes, basically? If you want to say Satan's greatest weapon in our homes, let me ask you this. I know that we're having house being shown a few times a day. Our owner is going to sell the house. We're going to move to a lesser rental house. I did announce to the Wednesday night class the other night. I paused and I go, I need to let you know about this first. I said, I'm going to be moving in 2 months. And there was silence. Now, I would have been really sad they flaunted. Oh, right. No. But, so there's a risk in that. And I said, I'll be moving to another real house. So anyway. But you know, one of the things that's interesting, if I leave my mess out everywhere and the house is shown, who gets the heat for it?
Real estate.
That's true. But in terms of our house, who's going to feel like that? You know that they failed. Yeah, that's right. I've learned that with Yvette. You know, If he comes to her, you know, it's interesting when the children are struggling, not doing well. Guess who takes the heat for that or feels like, you know, and so you'll find that you'll look around, and if your child is different, oftentimes mama feels pressure. What kind of pressure? Does anybody have to say something to mama? No, it's social pressure. So keep in mind, as we raise our children, there's going to be immense social pressure. And this is why we need to commit to God. I know they're laughing at us marching around these walls. You know, I know everybody thinks, well, that is crazy. You're just a religious fanatic. But I tell you, God will bless you in the end. So here's going to be our battle. We think we know it, and we're really afraid to commit to God's ways. And so again, another great example is King Saul. You remember King Saul's first failure? Remember what was happening? He's the new coach in town. And head coaches, what's the job of a head coach in football? That is to have a good graduation rate, right? And that is to never break the rules and to be a really good family man, right? No. What's the job of a football coach in the SEC? To win. Your first season. Oh man, can you imagine here? Now here's Saul. He's new head coach in town. And he's coming, he's going to play Notre Dame. Or maybe he's going to be playing, you know what? He's playing this team. They got 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, people as the sand on the seashore. At least the morale on Saul's side was real high. Notice how encouraged they were to have Saul lead them. And the people hitting the caves and thickets and rocks and tunnels and in pits, you know. His army was melting like an ice cube on a July day. And guess what? He was ready to fight, but guess what he had to do? He had to wait for Samuel. And now here in this verse, the people that did follow, they were like this, you know. So you think, man, he's in a tough situation. And more people are leaving, and Samuel's late. What did Saul have to do before he went to battle? What? He needed to consult God and worship God. Now, could he offer a sacrifice? No. Had to have an authorized person offer a sacrifice. So here's God's wisdom, God's way. It's telling, I'm going to die before Samuel gets here. What should he do? He should wait. Now, brethren, you'll find tougher situations than this in your life with your children and with your mate. You need to know the truth of God and the wisdom of God, and you've got to have the conviction to follow it. And of course, what happened here, he offered the burnt offering, Samuel showed up, and they did win the battle, but he ended up losing his kingship. And so that's very important. Okay, now, class discussion. I probably spent more time in the introduction than I should have in review. How does the world influence us and how we build our homes? How does the world influence? What's that? Yeah, they have a different set of priorities. And why don't people kind of do the same things? Peer pressure. And you'll feel it when you have your child. You know, you're proud of your child. You want to see how your child does with others, don't you? You want to see how they do, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it can become an insidious tool if you're not careful. Second question, why is it difficult to trust God's wisdom when it comes to our home? Why is that difficult? When you do God's way, you just automatically get results, don't you? You don't, do you? Why is it hard?
It's an emotional area. It's just deeply emotional. Family relationships are dearest to me.
Yes, it's very emotional, and you don't see really the fruit of what you know. It's like raising the crop, but the crop doesn't come up in one season, it comes up in years. I do this right. What's the end result? And you know what? I'll tell you, as your children leave the home, it'll come to you, mistakes you make, you know. But that's the way. Okay, you know, so what we've got to do here, we've got a long-term crop, and we've got to learn how to, you know, we got to trust God's wisdom now. Not instant results. and the peer pressure of the immediate, what we're seeing with other people. Okay? When should we be first taught about the home? How early should we be teaching on the home? That's true. You're teaching, but that's right. You are teaching. You know, I was screaming and hollering at my mate. I'll never forget, my dad and my mother, I think, had a good marriage, but there were times, I'll never forget sometimes as a kid, my dad, for whatever reason, got mad in early in the morning and a few times was shouting at my mother. They were shouting at each other. And that woke me up as a kid, and that frightened me. And I never forgot it. It's interesting. You are constantly teaching. You're teaching by example, but how early should we start in teaching by words?
One of the things that's impressed me about the new curriculum we have is it points out all the way through connections. And like when we were talking about Achan, I mean, it pointed out right then that a father's decision impacted the whole family.
Yes.
And so, I mean, I just was really impressed with all the connections that series made. Yeah. But, yeah, even in the littlest Bible classes, they can get it.
Teach at all times. Okay. You'll get, and that's the thing is that you know, I tell you what, you love the Lord, your mate loves the Lord, you're committed in that, you've got a good home relationship, your child will get this. And so much is going to depend on us and our relationship to one another. But they'll get this if we're really committed. What do we see in our culture that is a result of bad homes? Okay, we're going to limit the list to 10. What do we see?
Divorce.
Violence.
Well, most of our kids are just raising themselves. Parents are absent. They're just not to do whatever they
want to do. Yeah. What else?
Disrespect for authority.
Say?
Disrespect for authority.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And what's sad is we're seeing that number grow, aren't we? And that'll destroy the country. I've got a good article by R.J. Evans I'll be putting in the bulletin soon. I should have put it in this week, but I'll put it in next week, where he talks about Gibbon's points on the decline of Rome and the fall of Rome. Because eventually, when you have people with no responsibility, no respect for authority, then the government wants to give them money. Then you're going to get more of those. The home's been broken down by a series of things, but you'll eventually have people to vote to let people, you know, give people money that don't do anything, and that number grows till it's unsustainable. That's another development for another day, but we're probably at. This country could fall. People who walk by faith can be strong. People who have good families will be okay if that happens. But more, you know, the additional breakdown of the homes, drugs, lack of education, you know, it breeds things. And that's the, you know, we become animals. Romans 1 tells you, you become animals. Left to that type of mentality without a good home. Go ahead.
Well, and specifically now we've got, you know, two mommies raising kids or two daddies raising kids, if you want to call them that. So you've even got a variety of.
Right, yeah, right. You're having then a, you know, complete reevaluation more. So what happens? You'll have a society. You'll have a society that will hate our guts. And we're getting there. We're getting there where government policy and other things will put their bullseyes on us. Even though we may do nothing more than live a godly life. But guess what you do when you live a godly life? You're going to be different. And people will be threatened by that. If we'll say homosexuality is wrong, then there's going to come a time, I'm afraid, where you're not going to be able to get a job. If you say those words. And there are other things along those lines that can happen. But again, like I say, we're going to trust God. We're going to follow. We're going to do what's right. Number five. How can we be deceived about the real level of commitment we have in our homes?
Statistics.
What's that?
Statistics. The media puts out statistics about, you know, this many marriages fail, this many people don't graduate high school, whatever, yeah. Which has really lowered the bar.
Yeah.
So, we accomplish those minimal tasks, hey, we're far above the majority of it is true, but that's really not the bar we should be achieving.
Right. And, you know, when you see statistics, you also have to see consequences. You may think, well, yeah, divorce is common until you experience it. It may be common, but it's extraordinarily painful and hurtful. But what I'm getting at here with this question is, how could we as Christians be not seeing our own personal commitment in our home? Can we be blind to what we're doing?
Well, you know, that's challenges. You're not going to know how faithful you are. You're not going to know. Yeah, if you don't have challenges that come up, you're not going to know how you will respond to it.
What do we tend to do? How do we view ourselves? That's sort of what kind of Christian are you? What kind of Bible student are you?
We compare ourselves to others.
We compare ourselves to others, which is his point there. But even when we compare ourselves to other Christians, but what's the tendency? Come on, be honest. What's the tendency? If Ed can, you know, tell me about my tendency, what's my tendency? I tend to view myself as what? Being okay. Sometimes it's the baby's got to go, Houston, there's a problem. And we don't like to see that. And that's why if you got good mates, you know, there are times they got to kind of tap you on the shoulder. Hey, guys, you know, you know, we're not communicating. You're ignoring things, you know. And we tend to want to think everything's really good. And sometimes it's not, okay? And so I'm telling you that that's one of our problems. I've known of Christians, they lose their children, and later they're crying, we did everything we could. What? And I know, because I knew them. I could see it coming. They were committed. They weren't committed to the Lord as they should have been. They couldn't see problems. Everything seemed to go smooth. So I'm telling you, in this area, there could be great deception. We can think we're doing well, and when we're just kind of drifting along.
Even when we recognize that we might have some problems that exist, we tend to give ourselves lots of excuses that we wouldn't give somebody else.
Yes, that's right. And we all do that. We all do that. And that's why in presenting this material, there are times I have to look and I pray. I ask God help. You know, God help me see. I'm falling short. Help me to be better. Help me not to be satisfied with the status quo. Now, sometimes we like things to go easy, and sometimes we accept the level that is not really acceptable. And so we got to the same time not be panicky, not be fearful of the corner, but at the same time we want to say, okay, as a man, I'm going to be a man. I'm going to step up. If there's some things falling short, I'm going to step up. I'm going to take responsibility. As a wife, I want to step up and make sure I'm not being molded into the world. I just want to be sure that I'm not afraid to count the cost and commit all. And so I'm speaking to us here. Us who really want to do all of this. It's just be reminded that sometimes you could be caught in a very comfortable pattern that you need to get out of. Okay, now, what's the greatest gift we can give those in our homes? There's a lot of ways to answer this. These questions kind of go a lot of ways. What's the greatest gift? Time. And when you're giving your time, you're giving a lot. You're giving your life. Yeah, your time. It's developed, and I've got several possible answers here. So, giving your time. What's the greatest gift we can give those in our homes?
An example.
Yeah, our faith. Be an example of faith. Teach faith. One thing I like to emphasize, and this is more toward children, the greatest gift you can give your children is a good relationship with your mate. Do you know that? What does a good relationship with your mate do for your children? We've already talked about it. It
gives them security.
It gives them security. What else? You're teaching. And you'll find if you want to grow faith, it's just like growing something. I remember when I was a second grader, I wanted to grow my own garden. That was exciting. And my dad helped plow the ground a little bit, and I planted seeds. But guess what? The next day, there was no plant came up. And even when plants started coming up, that was all the only one that started coming up. Guess what else came up?
Weeds.
I didn't want to pull weeds. I didn't want to do any work. I just want to see plant grow. I'd water. I'd speak good words to it.
And then, so what kind of plants did I get? They weren't much. You know, my daddy go out there and help me, so I'm doing some things. But basically, you know, I didn't pull weeds. See, in the home, a good relationship and a good communication you make will give fertile soil for faith to grow. When you don't have a good relationship with your mate, you can do a very good job of planting seed, but uncontrolled anger and other attitudes that occur within the home can just tear down what you're building on one hand, and then it's being torn down on the other hand. And so that's typically what that, you see this a lot with people who come out of homes of Christians, is that there was a weakness in the relationship, and that shows up later with the children. And they know good things, and they're conflicted, and they got to work their way through that. Okay, now, let's go to the next section. I know I'm taking more time than necessary, but I like the discussion, let's now talk about finding a mate. Yes, we don't have any of our college students in here today, so we can give them some wisdom. But let's talk about from the standpoint of a parent, helping a child find a mate. Was Abraham concerned about who Isaac married? Let's look at some verses here. Who'd like to read Genesis 24:1-4 for me? Who'd like to do that? Bryce, would you do that?
Now Abraham was old, well advanced in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. So Abraham said to the oldest servant of his house, who ruled over all that he had, "Please put your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. You shall go to my country and to my family and take a wife for my son Isaac."
Abraham concerned about this? Abraham was concerned about this. Buddy, Abraham's full focus was on this. Now, this man that he was having to do this, he was the oldest servant of his house. He was chief guy. He was guy to them. They have had him a long time. The reason why he was chief guy is because he was a man of faith. He trusted God. He was like Abraham. And Abraham trusted him and knew that here I'm going to put this under the authority of my servant. If I don't make it, you know, this servant's going to do the job. And so, notice again, we'll read a little more, verses 6 through 9. Walker, how about that?
But Abraham said to him, "Beware that you do not take my son back there. The Lord God of heaven, who took me from my father's house, from the land of my family, he spoke to me and swore to me, saying, 'To your descendants I give this land.' He will send his angel toward you, and you shall take a wife for my son from here. And if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be released from this oath. Only do not take my son back there." So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter.
Let's go back and look at this. What's the goal here? He wants to get a wife from back in the land that he came from. And it wasn't going to be just any wife. Matter of fact, he didn't know which wife he was going to get, but he knew what. He was depending on who? To help.
God.
Okay. So here was the determination. Basically, if you were going to look at the criteria, if God is going to choose, what kind of person is what kind of wife Isaac could have if God is choosing? I'll have somebody help go to heaven. Help build faith. Now, parents, let that be our laser focus, okay? There are things we can do to make a difference in this area. We'll talk about that as we go down the line, about how you can have influence upon who your child marries. Now, notice one other thing here. Wisdom here. There was something that he was not to do. Verse 6. What was he not to do?
Don't take Isaac there.
I wonder, why is he doing that? Don't take Isaac there. What if Isaac found a good wife? Would he want to live in the suburbs of the big city? Or out in Timbuktu? You see, what's he thinking here? Why would it be bad for Isaac to marry someone that's a good person and they live in the suburbs of the city? Yeah, there's a couple of things here. He's looking at God's promises, because he talked about
the descendants of this land. And let me tell you another thing God had in mind, because you see this when Joseph went into Egypt. Did God want Israel to live in the suburbs of the big city in Egypt? No, he wanted them to be separated. And that's why they became an abomination to the Egyptians. There were several things going on here in the development of this nation. He wanted this nation to be separate and apart. And so again, this is my strong opinion here. He didn't want Isaac, he wanted Isaac to fulfill the promise, but he didn't want Isaac to be absorbed into the culture of the big city there. Now look how he was, the steps that were taken to find a wife. Who'd like to read 12 through 14? Here, where we find the finding of a wife. Here's the servants. Who'd like to read for me?
And he said, O Lord God of my master Abraham, please give me success this day and show kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, here I stand by the well of water, and the daughters of the men of this city are coming out to draw water. Now let it be that the young woman who said to whom I say, please let down your pitcher that I may drink, and she says, drink, and I'll also give your camels a drink. Let her be the one that you have appointed for your servant Isaac, and by this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master.
What's he doing here? What's the servant doing? He's praying. Now this is the patriarchal age, and I think there would be things that could be heard in this in terms of the providence of God and the actions of God. But notice over and over again, you know, Lord help. Lord help. Parents, that's what we need to do. Asking for help. Asking for help in raising our children. Asking for help when our children are sick, find a mate. And try to give some wisdom in how one finds a mate. You know, one of the things I'll just tell you now, if you want your children to marry a Christian, what things can you do to help that happen, to make that happen?
Expose them to Christians.
Yeah. Be around other Christians. Could you go off and move to a place like Virginia where it start a church from scratch where there's nobody in a long ways and still be able to have your children meet Christians and get to know Christians? Absolutely. Take some traveling. Take some other things. But you could be thinking in terms of these things. And one thing in an area like this, one of the things you need to be doing is you need to be having other Christians into your home with children the age of your kids. You need to have a home that is open where people come in and out. And I know of homes that have done that in the Birmingham area, another area, I enjoy that. But guess what? All their children married Christians. How about that? No surprise. So there are things here. Again, I'm working ahead a little bit in some of the discussion, but things that we can do. Okay, now, a couple questions here. We want to learn how to start our homes. We need to know who can marry. Who can marry? Can your child marry anyone that's a Christian? As we know under the New Covenant, there are some restrictions as far as who can marry. Matthew 19:9, and I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. First Bible? Really simple here. One of the things we need to instill in our children is that not everyone is eligible to marry. You could describe those who may marry into three groups. First off, one who's never married can marry. You also could say one whose mate has died. We could look at Romans 7. And then thirdly, the one who put away their mate for the cause of fornication. Now, if somebody is not in those three categories, and they have been married and divorced, then I don't believe they have the right to remarry. Now, why do our children need to understand this? Why is that important? What if they just kind of, you know, they don't know much about it, and then they start dating somebody who's not eligible to remarry, and then they start dating. It's harder to go backwards. It is very difficult. Actually, you're contagious here. My throat is all dry and scratchy. I don't want to talk. But this is something that, with the society we're in, we're going to see more of that. And it is really important to emphasize that. Here's another thing that I tell you, I see older people make this mistake. By the way, I'm going to preach this lesson soon publicly and talk about some of these things. But it is extremely foolish today or to keep close company with someone who is not eligible for marriage. You ever seen that? We're just friends. Now, I've seen young people do that, and they're just friends. And in one case, the person didn't marry, but I think they got involved in immorality. And there was great consequences for the young lady that got involved with the man, and this man, you know, later went into liberalism because he wanted to remarry. I've seen grandparents do this. I was in a congregation once, and there was a man that whose wife had died. He had a right to marry, but in our congregation, we had a woman, and after her husband died, she just rashly jumped into a marriage and rashly jumped out of it and told everybody, "I could never marry again." She told her children, grandchildren, and anybody in that congregation. This man comes into the congregation and decides she can remarry. Because men, they will lust, and if he goes looks at a TV program and lusts at somebody, then he's been guilty of adultery, and so she really had a right to put him away. Oh, he came up with the craziest ideas. And I remember they married. She was withdrawn from her. She turned her back on her own children and grandchildren, tremendous hostility. And a few years later, this man that she had to have put a bullet through his head. But I'll tell you, both young and old can do that. And so I want you to be mindful as we talk about these things that we need to teach this firmly, and to do it to prepare our children for what is right and wrong. We'll finish this outline again in the lesson 2 next week. Thank you for your participation.